Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you, and I appreciate you being with me for another episode of Perspectives on Healthcare. Today, you will be hearing from Vineet Nair. He is a family physician from up in Ontario, Canada, our friendly neighbors to the north. He is a member of Generation X. Vineet, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your role in healthcare, please.
Sure. Well, I'm a family physician, so I'm a primary care provider here in Ontario and Canada. So I've been working in that level for, I guess, almost 16 years now. Time certainly flies. I'm a full-service family physician. I see patients every day just for whatever things that may come up, whether it's newborns to prenatal care to seniors and palliative care. And been very happy and fortunate to do that. It was kind of a profession that took a bit of time to find my place in it. I think I wasn't sure what I wanted to do in medicine, but I think when I was in my medical school, I kind of finally realized that what I really liked was that whole person, big picture kind of focus on healthcare. And so that's kind of what drew me to family medicine, knowing that broad spectrum of information on a lot of different topics and having that whole patient mindset.
Okay. So I don't know why this is just occurring to me today. Okay. But you say family physician, and I'm assuming you're literally seeing entire families. And so in that way, you're learning more about the dynamics of the individuals that you're seeing than just seeing a broad spectrum of patients, meaning, you know, prenatal to all the way through geriatrics, but you're also seeing seeing, you know, genetic trends, you're seeing things that are going on within the family that may all be contributing to what's going on with your patients. I don't know why that's a startling revelation to me that just, but am I characterizing it properly?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, lots of different terms: primary care provider, family physician, general practitioner. I think the real distinction is that longitudinal care, where you're building relationships with individual patients. But again, yeah, you're right, the families are there too. So whether it's the social dynamics within that family or seeing some trends in maybe not necessarily genetic stuff, but just in terms of upbringings and what have you that might lead to certain lifestyle issues. So seeing that kind of relationship is neat. And yeah, you do have that whole family dynamic. So you get to see, kids that become teenagers and moving on from there, right? So it is really rewarding that way.
Yeah. And okay. So I think from an educational standpoint, you have kids that are going through school and then they get passed from one grade to the next grade. And there is, all of the relationship that they built with that teacher doesn't get passed on with them as they move along educationally. But you've got the benefit of having that someone can be a patient with you for as long as you are in practice. And in that way, you have the almost a lifelong relationship built with them, which is, a pretty cool thing where you're not losing that every time you take the next step of transition to the next level. So very cool. What does quality healthcare mean to you?
Yeah, so in terms of quality health, I think for me, it has come back to that quintuple aim, which has kind of been the lingo in quality improvement work of late with the Institute of Healthcare Improvement work. So that quintuple aim is looking at having five elements that we all want to look at whenever we're talking about how we can improve healthcare. So that's talking about improved patient experience, improved provider experience, better outcomes, obviously, higher quality of care, so more cost-efficient care, and then having equity as kind of the lens we're looking through all of that, so everybody has equal access to this high level of care. So I think that is kind of the ultimate goal with any kind of changes we make in healthcare, is to think about that whole quintuple aim.
Okay, talk to me about patient experience and then the concept of provider experience. Can you share a little bit or shed a little bit more light on those, please?
Sure. Absolutely. So patient experience, obviously, how the patient feels they're cared for in the system, right? That they're feeling they're being heard, that they're getting the answers that they want, they need, they're getting the care that they need when they need it. So I think that's kind of pretty obvious thing when people try to think about how to improve the healthcare system, think how can we make this better for the patient so they get the tests they need or the treatments they need at the right time. I think provider experience sometimes isn't there or hasn't been always at the forefront of that, because sometimes what patients want isn't always good for the provider or good for the system, right? So, I mean, you could have, you know, the patients want 24-hour access to their primary care provider, but that's not great for the provider to be on call or have a pager or have their cell phone out there. So, and also there's a lot of administrative burden that's put on the providers that in order to provide that care, and that can be quite heavy and lead to burnout quite heavily. So always thinking about, you know, we're doing this step to improve the system, but is that offloading a ton of administration work and paperwork or forms or time that makes the physician more likely to be burnt out? So I think you have to have both of those aspects in mind, because they're both key parts of the system, right? We want the patients to be happy and healthy, and we want the providers to be, you know, satisfied in their work. They're not leaving the profession for something else, that they feel like they're really making a difference.
Yeah. And I mean, you want the patients to be happy and healthy, and you need the providers to be happy and healthy as well. And that goes mental health as well as their physical health and the stress, as you've mentioned, of what goes into the work that they're doing. Can you give me an example of quality healthcare?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously biased as a primary care provider, but I think for me, I think having that patient-centered medical home, I think, is a key aspect of quality care, right? Where a patient feels that they have a place to go, where that clinic, or that may not be an individual, maybe the whole clinic is where they go on a regular basis, but that clinic knows them as a person. That's where they can go to get answers to questions, to get referrals to other more advanced care, but they have that kind of connection where they feel cared for. And I think if you're just floating around and you're not, you know, connected to any kind of healthcare system, you're just on your own to find out where to go, whether it's a walk-in clinic, self-referrals to different places, or just going to the emergency department, I think having that one space where you know that you're cared for and all your information is there is a huge aspect of quality care.
Okay. You mentioned a concept that was surprising to me. You said a medical home. Can you talk to me about that? And I'm assuming, okay, listen, I'll disclose personal bias here, okay? I'm a person with a disability, and I'm all about living independently in the community, but I don't want to live in a medical home. But from what I'm hearing you talk about, that's not the concept.
No, it's like just having a family physician. Could be the most simple and most common, and, you know, visualization of that is that you have your primary care provider. That's where you go for your health care. You go there for all of your healthcare concerns, and if you need further care, that provider will refer you on to somewhere else. But you have a place to go. I think there's, certainly in our system, there's a lot of people that are called orphaned patients. They don't have a family practitioner or a primary care provider, so they're kind of just forced to find their own way, right? They have to either go through walk-in clinics, where there is that episodic care, but not that longitudinal relationship care, or they go to the emergency department, or they're just kind of fending on their own, right? So I think having that one space where, you know, that person knows you as a human, as a person, not just like your knees or your gynecological check or your arthritis check, but knows everything. So I think that's what we talk about when we talk about the medical home piece, where there's a place that somebody knows you as a whole person, and that's where you can go to have your questions answered and feel confident that you're being cared for as that whole person.
Okay. Maybe you can talk about this in the Canadian system, because sometimes when we have those here in the States, you have the clinics and you have staff turnover there. You know, people are coming in there, they're getting experience, and then they're moving on to either private practice or something like that. And so even in those settings, you maybe have one place that you continue to go to, but you're experiencing new staff, or, you know, you're not having that longevity of relationship in that. Is that something that you see in the Canadian system as well, or?
Yeah, I think it's certainly dependent on where you are in types of locations. Certainly in places that are maybe more rural and harder to recruit the physicians, you will get more turnover, right, where a physician will come in for, you know, 2-3 years and then move on to a bigger city or to somewhere else if they so choose. So there is that issue. And I think that's why we've kind of moved to that kind of medical home piece, just to try to cover all the bases, because we realize it may not be feasible to say everybody has a family physician or family practitioner for themselves, and that may not be practical or able to be done. So we've kind of probably just hedged our bets a little bit by saying the medical home piece. I think certainly from my standpoint as a physician, I think the best care is when I have that relationship and I know the person and it's kind of a longer longitudinal relationship. The next best thing though is at least if I'm kind of coming in for a 6 month, 1 year kind of locum or work situation, that chart is completed and it has all the information there and they've been coming to this place for a long period of time. So even if it's, hopefully it's not a HERS turnover everybody at the same time, right? Maybe the physician leaves, but the nurse is still there or the front desk reception is still there. So there's always somebody there to kind of have that warm handoff. So you have that continuity and the patient still has a place to go and is not feeling like they are stranded.
Yep. And okay. From an advocacy perspective, I view myself as a self-advocate in my care. And as in that way, I feel like I am kind of the hub of the wheel and all the spokes are, you know, the different specialties that I see, the different physicians that I see, all of them. And at the center of that hub is me trying to hold everything together. But I see in the paradigm that you're laying out that there is that the medical home is kind of there in the center of the hub trying to help coordinate that. So I'm not by myself trying to just keep all of the plates spinning or all of the, you know, everything coordinated. Am I properly framing that?
Yeah, I'd say that's correct. Not to say that the patient shouldn't be at the hub as well, right? It should be a duo there working together. But yeah, I think the idea that the patient has to, you know, have a copy of everything and has to be, you know, on top of all these different appointments and specialties and have to be responsible solely for that can be overwhelming to many patients, especially those that need it the most. So I think having that space that would be the responsibility of that patient medical home. Yeah, but I think it is sort of still working with the patient and trying to figure out how we can work with them to make sure their goals and objectives are being met.
Yep. And I mean, it's in there, we're still talking about patient-centered care where the patient has to be in the middle of everything and has to be a part of everything. So I would characterize it as the patient not being alone in doing that, but they've got a support system in place. So what do you wish people understood about your role in healthcare?
I think there's lots that I wish people had understood about primary care in general, but I think, you know, the big thing is that we are there as that hub, as that kind of connection with the healthcare system. Certainly in Canada, we are the gateway to the healthcare system for a lot of patients. You can't self-refer to a specialist here. So I think what I want people to realize is that the primary care provider is really looking at that patient as the whole. And so whenever we are making decisions and trying to manage the care, we are thinking about all the different aspects of that patient's care. So it does get complicated trying to coordinate that. And I think sometimes certainly specialties can get, you know, flippant with kind of like just saying, this is how the family doctor take care of this, or just add this medication or do these things. And we think, well, yes, that's great for that one system, but they have five other systems or five other problems going on. We have to kind of make sure we kind of address all of those and make sure we're not overwhelming the patient with those kind of things. And then from the public health standpoint, for the public standpoint, I think we're overall like well respected by the public, but I think there is still that idea that, you know, more tests are always better and you know, we need to do more and more. And I think everyone should try to keep those big picture things in mind, that testing does have their own inherent challenges. And I think we aren't being gatekeepers in the sense of trying to prevent cost. I think that can be the idea. Sometimes you feel like, you know, we don't want to refer because of this, it's not necessary. You want to save money or the test isn't going to be too expensive in a public healthcare system. But I'm sure even in the insurance world, it's the same mindset. People feel like it's there, but realistically, you know, our mindset is not that at all. It's always about like, what are the benefits of these tests and these referrals? What are the risks of them? What are the potential harms of doing these kind of things? And is it really going to change the management plan? So I think realizing we're always thinking about the patient at the heart of it and hopefully having that discussion with the pros and cons of any test, treatment, what have you, and then giving the patient that freedom to decide what's best for them.
Yeah, what a powerful concept, making sure that the patient has the information, that they've got the pros and the cons. And it's really, again, I've said this before on the podcast, but it's a power shift, right? Because in the past, it has been that the medical professional is the one who has all of the knowledge and the patient comes and says, tell me what I'm supposed to do. And they say, do this and, you know, take two of these and call me in the morning, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason why that's the protocol that we're used to. But now it shifts into say, okay, here are the options. You can you know, not to go quite Matrix on you, you take the red pill or you take the blue pill. And there's a consequence that goes with the red pill and a consequence that goes with the blue pill. And it's your decision as to how you move forward. Does that make sense at all?
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think, you know, from a provider standpoint, I think people don't often realize that it's actually a better place for us to be as well, right? Because I mean, if I'm feeling like it's my job to make sure that every patient with this diagnosis is on this medication, is on these medications, and if they're not, then I'm a bad physician, that's pressure on me. And I feel it kind of causes antagonism with the relationship with the patient, right? Whereas if I think, well, my job is not to say they have to be on this medication, my job is to tell them these are the recommended options for someone in your condition. These are the pros, this is why we think this is what's recommended, but it's up to you to decide to do it or not. So I think that's much more, easier for me to kind of go to sleep at night and not feel that tension about like, I've got to make this happen. I've got to make this guy quit smoking. And, you know, if I don't, I'm a bad doctor. Well, no, I bring it up. I see where he's at in terms of this, his interest in quitting, and does he know the options of how he could maybe do it? Does he know the harms of doing it? Does he know why he's doing it? And then if he chooses to keep on smoking, well, I've done my part, and I kind of just, I have to live with that. I'm not going to be mad at the patient because that doesn't help anybody, right? So I think that idea for patients and providers is super helpful to have it. Just your job is to provide information, give them the options, pros and cons, and then hopefully they're making a decision that's informed. And then you have to be okay with that. It's not our life. It's not, we're there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes with them at that one day. It's not our life to decide those things.
Yeah. It makes total sense. And there's a lot of pressure, I would imagine, that goes with that as well. When if you're the one that's telling the patient what to do, and then something happens in that and it doesn't turn out as intended, that, you know, it comes back to you and it's like, my decision is what caused this outcome. But anyway, what excites you about the future of healthcare?
Well, I mean, I think there's lots of things that we're working towards in healthcare, and certainly technology is a piece of that. I think a couple of things that come to mind is the move towards thinking more on a population level, I think is a good place to be moving towards. I think we've traditionally gone into a, fee-for-service, you know, patients in front of you, you deal with that person at the time, but that's all you think about. If he's not in your office, you don't think about him again. Whereas now we're looking more at a population level, like how can we can get, you know, everyone with diabetes to have the right level of care, or everyone with hypertension to be on the right level of care, making sure if they haven't been coming in, that we proactively reach out to them to come in. So it's kind of looking at it as a population rather than just like, if I see them, I'll deal with it. But if I don't, I don't think about it. So I think that's really powerful in terms of public health and improving that floor of health, raising the floor for everybody's health. I think technology is huge in the sense that we've all moved towards, you know, virtual visits and phone visits and those kind of things, which has been exciting for a lot of reasons. I mean, it's not any less work for me, to be honest, whether it's a phone appointment or a video appointment, it's the same amount of time. But for a patient, it's huge, right? They can, you know, don't have to leave work, book time off work, come drive somewhere, pay for parking, park and come, and it's a whole day all of a sudden. So having that option really helps improve access for a lot of patients. And then also just the communication standpoint with technology in terms of having that moving towards, we're not there yet, certainly, but moving towards some sort of harmonized information system where a patient can move throughout the system and realize that their information is following them. Because I think that's been a bothersome aspect for many patients where they think, I've answered these questions 10 times before, but it's another doctor, I have to answer them all over again. When shouldn't they already know this? And certainly this day and age, patients assume that I have all the information of their visit at the hospital, but I often don't. And it feels kind of embarrassing that I don't have to physically call over and have them fax something over to us, which is ridiculous, right? So
sure.
I think if we can, you know, move towards that, that's exciting. And that's hopefully coming. I know there's lots of work going on. It's not a simple fix, but I think the knowledge that it's something we need to move towards too is exciting.
Great. All right, last question for you. What is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
Well, I think we probably touched on a number of things, but I think being patient-centered is always a good place to start, right? Just being mindful that this is the patient's health, the patient's life that we're considering. So, presenting it as such as the pros and cons and then letting the patient make an informed decision. I think that's a great place to start. I think always looking at the big picture in health is incredibly important as well. I think we often get caught up in our algorithms and our guidelines and what have you, and we start focusing on these things rather than, okay, what is the ultimate goal here, right? The ultimate goal is I think from a primary care standpoint, is to give this patient the best chance to live a long and healthy life, and the happiest life they can live, right? It's not just to have them live long and in misery, right? So we want to just give them those, keeping that in mind. So it's not about optimizing numbers on a computer screen or lab results. It's about ultimately giving that person the best chance to live into their 80s, 90s and feeling good, right? So,
yeah, fantastic. And who wouldn't want to do that? And of course, I'll end with this. I have a friend who is like 98 years old, and someone was saying like 98's really old. Who wants to live to be 98? And I said, like everybody who's 97. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. Hey, Vineet Nair, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, taking the time, and I respect your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.